Blog Talk Radio.
I'm a truth terrorist. I'm a knowledge gangster. I'm a black history hitman. I'm a lie killer, urban gorilla. I gotta be a roughneck.
Free the Black Panthers, FCBP. Stand for free the Black Panthers. And fuck the black police. That 13th Amendment. Trying to make a slave of me. You can lock my body, can't trap my mind, not forever be free.
Okay,
free the Black Panthers, FCBP. Stand for free the Black Panthers, and fuck the black police. Feds infiltrated our movements for black leadership roles. But we still here, finna build here, fuck coin sale bro.
Show,
they got me started, lying hearted, I'm the new Mufasa. And I'm all about Umoja, first in Gruz Usaba. Let's bring back the black families, we need our father. Single mama, son and daughter, that's root of the problem. Wise up, we wise up, unity so powerful. Black banks, black schools, black on black power moves. You telling lies, you think this shit gon' be televised. Black power, be scared guys, they be standing there like they paralyzed, huh? We say fuck the system, cause we above the system. We keep ARs and pistols, shotguns that's worth the crystal. But that's for self-defense, make sure we have no issues. Be sure to leave it at the door if you have it with you. This for them freedom fighters, that lost their freedom. Until they freedom, we screaming carpe diem. This for the general, King Khalid Muhammad. We gon' make your day a holiday, I fucking promise. Free the Black Panthers, FCBP. Stand for free the Black Panthers, and fuck the black police. That 13th Amendment, tryna make a slave of me. You can lock my body, can't trap my mind, not forever be free.
Okay,
free the Black Panthers, FCBP. Stand for free the Black Panthers, and fuck the black police. Feds infiltrated our movements for black leadership roles. But we still here, finna build here, fuck coin sale bro.
RBG, 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 RBG. My sisters, my brothers, the council, the elders, shit, that's really all I need. We suited, we booted, don't do it, you stupid, we head to the armory. Black woman and goddess, regardless, my heart just don't fuck with misogyny. Bullshit, I don't tolerate it. Melanated, so you gotta hate it. Barack fucked up another conversation. Trump finna get inaugurated, damn. Unify or die, NBPP.org.
First and foremost, the new Black Panther Party, no other Black Panther Party, we are not violent. We are for self-defense and self-determination. The most violent group in this country are the police. What is taking place by the police department to black people across this country is ethnic cleansing and genocide. It has escalated since the day that Barack Obama was inaugurated in 2008. We have a people who are only 13% of the population, yet we make up 80% of the prisons. We have 50% unemployment rate in the black community, and it's actually even more than that because they're not counting our people that are in the prison. The 13th Amendment says you cannot be made a slave or indentured servant unless you commit a crime. The 14th Amendment forced our people to be subjects of this government. We never had any say in that. We need our own nation.
Holler if you hear me. Yeah.
Here we go, turn it up, let's start. From block to block, the sassy heart, the Jack and Mark. And the punk police can't fake the American. We can have big some safety. But right now I got my mind set up. Looking down the bottle, I'm a gun. Get up, cause it's time to make the payback back. To my brothers on the block, better take straps. Black, and accept no substitutes. I bring troops to the youth, tear a roof over the whole school. Oh no, I'm on the turning of the cheek. In case you can't see it, while we turn the other week. Now we got him in the smash, flash. I'm on the last to the pro, getting more cash. Until then, right.
the unity and the redemption of the African world.
Salute them, honorable Marcus
Garvey. We were not ready to listen then.
They might not have been ready then.
There's wonder whether we are ready.
Ain't no doubt about it.
To listen.
We ready, baby.
Now.
Let's go. Yeah, 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 yeah.
Flag fly high. Woo! Flag.
Forever, Garvey would never die. On my 90, the throne ready, let's take a ride. Tax, walk, fix, me and don't choose a side. This is the path for the warriors. Seldom travel, yet and still bad, glorious. Black power represents us. Do we the rolling with Africa or against us?
Savages and villages, and the scientists can't explain the pyramids. Evangelist, man. making a living on the videos of ribs of the little kids. Stereotyping the image of the images, and this is what the image is. You buy a cocky pants and all of a sudden you are there in Indiana Jones. And I took all the gold and took all the scrolls and even the bird bones. Some of the worst paparazzi I've ever seen and ever known. Put the words on this place that the world can see and it's all that we'll ever show. So the ones in the west will never move east and feel like we'll be at home. Get tricked by the beast but the way them a go flee when the monster is fully grown. All the money flying is where them two can defeat and them could have never clown. A spiritual DNA that prints in my soul and I will forever own, Lord.
Yeah. Savali, patience. What the old folks told me. Can you give with that? Discovering the world before this world. A world buried in time. Uncovered with rhymes. It gets no realer.
We born not knowing. Are we born knowing all? We growing wiser. Are we just growing tall? Can you read thoughts? Can you read palms? Can you predict the future? Can you see storms coming? The earth was flat. If you went too far, you would fall off. Now the earth is round. If the shape changed again, everybody would have stopped love. The average man can't prove of most of the things that he chooses to seek of. And still run research and find out the roots of the truth that you seek of. Galas teach in universities and claim like they're smart and cunning. Tell them find a cure when we sneeze and that's when their nose start running. And the rich get fixed up when we get cut. Wanna heal them broken bones in the bush with the wet mud. Can you read signs? Can you read stars? Can you make peace? Can you fight war? Can you milk cows even though you drive cars? Can you survive? It's all ours now.
It's crazy. When you feed people the truth, you don't know how they're gonna react. You're scared of wrongdoers. People that's just ignorant. You're scared of the truth. We patient. For now, who wrote the Bible? Who wrote the Quran? And was it a lightning storm that gave birth to the earth and then dinosaurs were born? Who made up words? Who made up numbers? And what kind of spell is mankind under? Everything on the planet we preserve and can it. Microwave it and try it, no matter what, we'll survive it. What's you? What's man? What's human? Anything along the land we consuming. Eating, deleting, ruining. Trying to get paper. Gotta have land, gotta have acres. So I can sit back like Jack Nicholson, watch niggas play the game like the Lakers. In a world full of 52 fakers, gypsies, seances, mystical prayers. You superstitious, throw salt over your shoulders, make a wish for the day, cuz like somebody got a doll of me. Sticking needles in my artery, but I can't feel it. Sometimes it's like part of me, but I got a real big spirit. I'm fearless, I'm fearless. Don't you try to grab hold of my soul. Like a military soldier, since 7 years old. I held real dead bodies in my arms, felt their body turn cold. Oh, why are we born in the first place if this is how we gotta go? Damn. To all the wisdom and knowledge seekers of the world. Savali, patience.
Peace be unto you, my beloved brothers and sisters. Sounds like throwdown time to me. But you say, Brother Eli, that's that throwdown talk I deal with tonight. First of all, I want to give honor and respect to our Creator, revealed to all and known by many names, which is the source of our power and victory in any encounter, in any battle, in any struggle.
I want to give thanks to our ancestors, our positive ancestors, who are legion. For if it were not for them, we would not be here to continue this fight that has been going on for so long with the devils of this planet, the demons of this planet. And in honor of them, especially those who put their life on the line, those who actually gave their lives for this cause throughout the years, I would say in the words of the last poet, blessed are those who struggle. Oppression is worse than the grave. It is better to live and die for a noble cause than to live and die a slave. So it is in their honor that I submit this tonight. I want to thank the brothers and sisters from Reality Speaks. I like that. Reality Speaks. Because we seem to have a difficult time dealing with reality today in the world. Back off down, I want to run away from reality. Seems like we want to laugh and play our way through this thing. And as Dr. Clark has once said, that great grand scholar of scholars, we either have to put race first and take our survival and liberation seriously, or we will cease to exist as a race. We will go out of business as a race. So we can't laugh and play this thing all the time. Now, I like to laugh and play just like anybody else. I like to have some fun. But you can't play all the time. There is the business, the very serious business of life. And so I like that Reality Speaks. And we have to stand still and listen to reality and not be overwhelmed by reality. To know that there is a power in the universe that created us first to represent it on this planet, and therefore that power, when we reconnect with it, can enable us to deal with any reality that we find ourselves confronted with. That we no longer fear reality, but face reality, we will be victorious in reality. And not only be survivors, but once again obtain power. So I want to thank Brother Jabari, who has called me 1,000 times on this, Brother Universal, the referee tonight, Sister Tekoa, and is it Sister Malika? I want to thank all of you, all of the brothers and sisters who participated in this, helped in bring this about. You know, you may not realize what it takes to put on a program like this. You may not realize what kind of sacrifices people have to make. So they have to be really dedicated, young men and women like this, who could be out jamming and partying tonight, decided to give their time and their resources so that this information can come to you. And I think they're worthy of your applause tonight. I know they are worthy of your support in every way. Tonight, before we get into our topic, I need to mention to you, usually I have to do what I call a black nationalist commercial. Because we're not brought to you by any of the rich niggas on the planet. They don't invest in these guys. We're certainly not brought to you by any rich white folks. They don't want to be because we don't want to be owned by anyone. We're brought to you by the auspices of the work and dedication and commitment we have as warrior scholars to this. Through the works we produce in writing and through our lectures and in other things. And it is only through your participation in that process, in short, bringing it right down front, it's only when you buy what we produce that we're able to continue to produce it. So I know so many of you here have brought my tapes and books. I know today, whatever weight I have in poundage is responsible for the beans you have put in the pot. And I thank you very much, and my family thanks you. And I ask you to continue to do that. And so I brought with me, I don't have any books, but I do have tapes tonight. And I hope that you will visit the table. And I do have my special signing pen, my blessed signing pen, that is ready to sign your tapes for you. So I invite you to do that. Much of what I want to cover tonight on this topic of the holidays, several of the holidays I will not be able to go into in detail, but I do go into them on the tape. So I'll be looking to meet with you there at the end of this lecture at the table. Thank you for your patience in this matter and for your support. Now let's get on with, let me get my eyes out here now, and let's get on with our discussion for tonight, which is holidays from the perspective of an African-centered reality. Now, I don't know just exactly how I'm going to approach this subject tonight, because you know I'm part teacher, part preacher, part brother from the street. So I don't know how it's going to come out, but we're going to let the spirit and the ancestors move with us. Is that all right with you?
Yes, it is, right. We're going to bring the microphone closer.
And I want to share with you as much information as I can in the period of time we have together. Now, we're talking about holidays from the perspective of an African-centered reality. This subject I have discussed so often, I have gotten tired of talking about it. But obviously, there's still a need to discuss it. Just like people are still overwhelmed by the idea that Jesus was a black man. I thought we had settled this 30 years ago. But it's still a fantastic thing today. In fact, my book I'm working on now is The Real Jesus Was a Black Man. And I thought we had settled it. I thought everybody knew that. But then I also have some other information I'm putting in there that I will discuss as we go on. But we're talking about this, and it's difficult because, as Brother Jabari said, folks think you're trying to take their pleasure away from them. You're taking my fun away from them. Y'all are just, killjoys. You want to take everything. What we going to have if we don't give these white folks this money? Misgiving and extra. What we going to do if we don't buy these clothes on Easter? Jesus going to be man with us. It's the wonderful good feeling you get from it. Brother Jabari used the example. You can get a good feeling from crack. Add a crack at it. That's why they do it. It'll make them feel good. But what does it do to their lives? You can get a good feeling from a prostitute. Will you take all your money you got and give it to her for one night? And that's it. You ain't got nothing else. And that's what you do on these holidays when you give white folks money you ain't even got. Money you haven't even received yet for a good feeling. You're doing the same thing as a junkie or somebody out in the street tricking with a prostitute. It's the same thing. I know you don't like to hear that, but you see these gray hairs, I don't care no more. I'm not trying to get along with you anymore. I love you. I want you to love me. I want you to be my friend. I want to be your friend. I'd like to be popular with every black person in the world, but I have found in these 58 years that that just ain't possible. So I don't care, but I love. And I have to speak what is called that tough love tonight. So you may get angry with me. I might not sell no tapes, baby. You got gas money for tomorrow. We're going to talk about holidays from an African-centered perspective. I look at everything from an African-centered perspective, and I'm getting tired of this dumbass question, why everything got to be black? For when you look in the mirror, Negro, what else can it be for you? For white folks, it's very clear. Everything got to be white. Even for black folks, red folks, yellow folks, and everybody else. We're the only fools in the world that ask such a question. Why everything got to be black? Well, look at yourself in the mirror and you'll find out why. And if that don't convince you, if you don't convince yourself that you look like Tom Selleck or somebody, because we can't do that, you know. Be looking so black and pretty, but think we're looking like something Clark Gable or somebody. And if that don't convince you, just the world of reality that you step into when you step out your door. Even with your big-time job and everything, with the glass ceiling and all. You know what I'm talking about, don't you?
Yeah.
Those realities bring it right down front. Why it got to be black? It has to be black. So I don't just stop at black. African-centered. Everything I look at from an African-centered perspective, which done messed up everything for me. I can't enjoy a movie. My wife don't even like to go to movies with me anymore. We can't watch television anymore.
For real.
Thank God for the midnight hour. At least we still got that. But you can't enjoy nothing when you have that consciousness because you see exactly what's going on. Everybody else sitting around there. And that's, we are the only people I know where you can get to laugh at their own insults. You be insulting the hell out of them, they be laughing at them.
Yeah.
Well, that's all they're fun. It ain't nothing but a joke. No, life is not a joke. Survival is not a joke, but let me stop now because I know I'm being too serious for you. Historical reality is what we're talking about. And that's what we're going to discuss in these holidays. I am not talking about belief. I don't care about belief. I don't care what you believe. Your belief means nothing to me. Your belief holds no weight with me. I may respect it and your right to believe it, but it is nothing that we can debate. It is a personal, sentimental feeling. It cannot be debated. There is no true religion because you cannot debate it scientifically and logically. It is a matter of what one chooses to believe. So that's one of the things you need to get up off of and start fighting each other. Stop fighting each other over that.
Teach. Teach.
There is the Creator who is not confused, but we are confused in all these man-made. I said, what? Man-made religions. Every one of them made by man. Every one of them. But you tell me it came from God out of heaven, this prophet, that prophet, this thought, this, that. Do you know how much blood was shed to make it as an established religion? I know you don't like to hear this, but we are dealing. I'm asking you not to deal emotionally, but to use your brain tonight. Don't run from your brain. It's the best thing you got. You got 10 to 20 billion brain cells, the greatest gift you have ever been given of any other creature on this earth. Don't run from it. And you will not offend God by using it. And yes, question God. He knows everything. And he ain't on no ego trip. You say God can't be questioned because you don't want to be questioned. Your ego can't stand up under question. But the creator of the universe, man, ask all the questions you think you need to ask. You give y'all all right? Let me get back to the subject now. I'm going to get bold. I'm not just going to take all five. If time permits, I'm going to take all six European holidays. As we call it in the African, some Yagomi. We're going to do. We're going to talk about Columbus Day, an orgy of death and destruction. Halloween, the original night of the living dead. Misgiving Day, a celebration of horrors. Xmas, the merry mess. Easter, the festival of fools. And America's Independence Day, the 4th of July. See if time will permit us this discussion tonight. There's five basic points I want to deal with and I want you to remember before we get into the actual discussion of the holidays themselves. Now, y'all might have to let me know about the time, like my mentor and teacher, Dr. Ben, I don't have time to watch. So you'll have to let me know. First of all, to celebrate holidays is very common for human beings. It's good to celebrate. As a matter of fact, as I study our history, which is my favorite thing to do, I find that in our great high culture science societies that achieved and accomplished more than any society has ever achieved or are achieving on planet Earth today in harmony with the Creator and humanity, that we spent one-third of the year working and two-thirds of the year celebrating. That's why we like to party so much now, but it's out of context. You don't own nothing, you don't control nothing. So you can't party as much as you used to. But we want to party all the time, but we love to celebrate. So if you try to take that from African people, you kill them. Because we celebrate. And it's good to celebrate. But there's one thing I noticed about this. There's one thing that concerns me about this. At no time in the history of the world do I remember any people celebrating their own destruction but my people. I don't know anybody else who does this. That celebrates their own destruction. People don't celebrate the wars they lost. They celebrate the wars they won. Number two, the celebration of holidays establishes and helps to maintain a strong emotional, a what? Emotional and cultural bond between you and that which you are celebrating. And I mean, we're emotionally involved in it. It makes you feel so good. And it becomes something that you can't live without anymore. Because you're emotionally attached to it. Like your soulmate. That bond becomes strong and you can't live without that force anymore. You see. And that's how it is with holidays. So what you're celebrating has to be something that is good and to your best good, or you're being bonded to something that is working against you. Third point, one of the main dangers of European holidays is how they help reinforce the emotional attachment that many of us have to Euro-American culture, that we have to white folks. Black folks love white folks.
Chair.
We'll forgive white folks in a minute for things we will kill each other about in this country.
That's right.
We look for reasons to forgive white folks. And they made us that way on the plantation. They hooked us up because they projected themselves to us as God. And somewhere there's got to be some good in them. And we'll put more energy into trying to find that good for which we have no historical basis whatsoever. And won't last a minute when it comes to working with black folks to get them on their feet and get them out of their insanity. I just can't deal with it no more. Niggas just get on my nerves. But you'll take a beating. You'll go to jail. You will bleed, you'll do anything to try to get the white man to act like what he cannot act like. He can't do it. Look at the history of Europe. He couldn't do it with himself.
Right.
How's he going to do it with the people he fears more than any other people on the planet Earth? Think about that. So it binds you to Euro-Americans and their institutions, which does not work in our best interest. Now, maybe you can tell me something different, and I'll be willing to listen. But is anything that white people have created that works for us, that's good for us? Can you name me anything?
Yes, sir.
Even this so-called educational system is designed to make us Oreo white folks? So, I mean, what is it that they have that's so... I want you to tell me. I've been in this world 58 years, and I want to know, what is it that they have that we just got to have? And I mean, pay the price that we pay for having it. Let them continue to run the world. The ugliest, stupidest, most backward people on the planet run the planet, because the people to whom the planet was given has let them take the power and run it. And go along every day as though this is normal. This is natural. And go to church and call on God. God can't hear you because you ain't doing what you're supposed to do. The Creator gave you a planet. You blew it. You fumbled the ball. Now you're not doing what you were put here to do, which is run the planet in righteousness according to the principles of my act and the principles that were given to you from the foundation of the world. And you think by hollering and shouting you get God's attention? You'll get the Creator's attention when you stand up like a man and like a woman. Confront this issue. Take on your enemy and know that it's when the Creator is with you, no weapon that is formed against you can prosper. You claim to have all this belief, but you're really worshiping the white man, not God. That's who you worship. You'll do anything a white man tells you to do. Anything. You'll be on your job knowing something you ain't supposed to do that is immoral and wrong, but you'll do it because he told you to do it, because he holds your stomach in his hands.
Check.
I ain't mean to go there, but I got to go with the spirit, y'all. Four, European holidays were created for Europeans, not for African people. It was created for white folks. They did not create these holidays for you. They later on found out we can make a lot of money off these stupid niggas if we let them celebrate. It's that simple. It was created for their needs, not our needs. So in celebrating them, you are not serving your own needs. You should know that by now, because by the middle of January, you're behind is crying and figure out where you're going to break, scrape, steal, and borrow to get this money from to pay for some stuff that you don't even know why you bought. And I don't understand this thing. Why I got to give you a gift because you gave me a gift? If you were sincere about giving me the gift, I ain't going to give you nothing. And why I got to give you a gift after, and what's this thing they call it? I'm trying to get into this, man, but it's taking me a while. Y'all help me now. Y'all pray with me. I don't care what name you pray in, just pray with me. What's this thing called Black Friday? Right after Misgiving Day.
Yeah.
They got you so psyched up.
Yeah.
You can't even go. My wife went to go to the mall to get what? You go to get something, stockings or something. She couldn't get in nowhere. Black folks got this. They got to give these white folks this money.
The next day.
The next day. With the turkey still hanging and the dollar still in the chest. But they are there fighting each other and stuff. It's like, I remember as a child, man, it was like a throwdown time with people. And some of them bust each other in the head to get money so they could go in there and give it to this white man so that they can please Jesus. This is so confusing. This is so sick. This is insane. Say, so, well, everybody's doing it. Then we're living in a massive, humongous sanitarium.
Right.
In a nut house. One big nut house. And if you were put in a sanitarium in the Bayberry, if you were put in a house where people were insane, would you, and knew you didn't belong there, would you say, well, everybody else in here is doing this. There's somebody hanging out the ceiling. There's somebody busting his head against the wall. There's somebody standing on his head on the chair. Say, well, everybody else doing something crazy. Let me do something crazy too.
Yeah.
That's what you say when you say you got to do these holidays. Everybody else doing it. And then the really the one, and I am letting you off the hook on that. We do it for the children.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're going to get there. If I miss it, you help me get back there, all right? Five, most of these European holidays were predicated on their fears. Halloween is the fear of the devil and their dead ancestors. I'm going to talk about that as I go on. Columbus Day, they were fearing the end of the world, so they were going around the world trying to conquer everything and everybody and get everything they could before the end of the world came. That was the state of the mind that these folk took with them. That's why they were so cruel and mean to everybody and everything. Misgiving Day, they were afraid of starving themselves to death. And the red man made a big mistake. We'll talk about that in a minute. Stop calling them people Indians. That's an insult. They are not. The indigenous red man, our red brother here. And Xmas, this was for fear of the devil and the imps getting them on Christmas Eve night. I hope we get a chance to talk about that. It's on the tape. And Easter was the fear of sin and its punishment by eternal damnation. And the 4th of July was the fear of the loss of control of their black slaves in the slave trade. Now let's move on. Y'all ready? Y'all with me? Now I might have to do a little reading here just to keep myself in line and not get off track.
Do what you got.
Let's deal with the first one now, which is Columbus Day, an orgy of death and destruction. First of all, let me tell you that this man, this Jew from Genoa, Cristobal Colon, was a criminal. Let's get that established. A criminal. That's what he was. He carried the original crime gene to this country with him. He's one of the most despicable characters that have ever lived on the face of this earth, and he opened the way for the transatlantic slave trade. What the hell am I going to celebrate him for? Why am I going to teach my children to celebrate him? He should not be viewed as a hero by our children. And you walk up in the school, any of these schools that be teaching your children this, that you have to pay your taxes for the support of that school. I think you have to do that in Maryland like you do in Pennsylvania and everywhere else. Even if you don't have children in school, you still got to pay taxes to the school. Then you're working for me. because you're taking my money before I see my money. So this is what you teach my children, and this is what you don't teach my children, especially in a predominantly African community. I don't want no principles and numbers being taught to my children as a hero. But if it's in the textbook, then you need to get another one. I offer you Dr. Ivan Van Cerner. I offer you a host of other scholars whose work is far more credible. But you are not going to teach this to my child, and my child is not going to celebrate any Columbus Day. And you go off to school on the first day when the school opens to get that stuff settled. Y'all scared of the school, ain't you?
No!
You're not. You must remember, they work for you. Now say this to yourself. They work for me.
They work for me.
I'm the boss.
I'm the boss.
So I tell them what I want my children to know and not. That's what you are as the parent. Oh, they'll try to resist you. The school, by the school. We have to book your butt in there. So we the boss. You take our money to pay for this, we the boss. My child does not salute the American flag. Huh? And they were making children who didn't salute the American flag stand outside of the classroom. I say, you do that one more time, I'm going to be a wealthy man, because I'm taking your butt to court, and I'm suing the hell out you. Because you are working against their amendment, whatever amendment right that is, they have the right to make the choice here. And do you make Jews in this class salute a swastika? So how you gonna make me salute a flag that represents a country that enslaved and murdered my people? And it was legal to do it for hundreds of years.
The idea that you see involves more than just opening the eyes and exposing the retina to the environment. It means then, in a sense, the mind sees through the eyes and directs the eyes, is what to see. We, in hypnosis, we deal with something that we call sometimes negative hallucinations. That is, getting people, let's look at the other type of hallucination first, say the positive hallucination. The positive hallucination, of course, is getting people to see what is actually not there. To see things that are actually not present in reality. And of course, some of you probably have seen those kinds of hypnotic tricks, where you tell the hypnotic patient or the client that he has a rabbit in his lap, and of course there's nothing there, and he then proceeds to pet it and play with it, even though it's not there. This is what we call a positive hallucination. You can also produce a negative hallucination. You can tell the hypnotized subject that an object which is right before his face is not there. And he will see everything except that particular object that you've directed him not to see. You see this sometimes in certain forms of schizophrenia, for instance. Some types of schizophrenics can look and see everything on this podium here, except to have this tape, even though it's right there before their eyes. Sometimes it's fascinating when you look at people who are so-called mentally disturbed, particularly the schizophrenic, because you can see the enormous powers of the human mind. And in this instance then, you have a mind that for some reason or other is instructing that patient not to see a particular object right before his face, and yet he's seeing all of the other objects around it very, very clearly. So what we're trying to talk about here then is that if your mind and your brain is inefficiently programmed, then that inefficient program will misdirect your eyes, will misdirect your senses, will create for you then a reality that is, in a sense, unreal. It will mean then, since you are missing reality and missing parts of that reality, you cannot efficiently cope with it. To a good extent then, when we look at the history of the African man in relationship to the European, we see a man whose reality has been created for him, whose mind and brain has been created in such a way that even the most obvious things in reality are overlooked and not seen. And this is often done through what we call this so-called education. Remember, I alluded to the idea of trained eyes, experienced eyes, which means that an individual's mind has been created so that the eyes can find what that individual is looking for. What makes you think then that the European who trains your mind is going to train your mind to see reality in such a way that it will overthrow his dominance over you as a people? How do you expect to see reality from a people who writes your history in such a way that you don't even see yourself there? So when you look at history, you're not there. You look at American history, you're not there. You look at world history, you're not there. You look at anthropology, you're not there. And if you are there, you're there as a primitive, Stone Age kind of people, never having written anything or contributed anything. You look at economics, and you're not there except perhaps as a commodity in and of itself. You look at mathematics, and you're not there. You look at every discipline, and you do not see yourself. What kind of reality then can we be looking at as a people when our minds have been trained in such a way that we have literally negative hallucinations as well as positive hallucinations? It's amazing then that when we look at these disciplines where we don't see ourselves, so many of us call this kind of education in these disciplines a good education. It's an amazing kind of thing. You've had a people who have hung you, lynched you, degraded you, enslaved you, killed Indians, colonized people all over the world, killed millions and millions and millions of people, exploited people, destroyed people, polluted the earth, have done such a job on the earth until you begin to wonder if they come from the same planet. You begin to wonder if these people are not a type of infection, a virus whose purpose it is to destroy the health of the world itself. And as we see them now beginning to destroy the earth and now getting ready to move their destructive natures into the cosmos itself, they've already made it to the moon and are now preparing to infect the whole of the universe. How can you then, as a people, assume that the people who've done all of these kinds of things to us as a people can give us a vision of reality? How can we accept their description of reality as the one with which we are going to guide our own behavior? How can we believe a people whose very lives depends upon our continuing domination? And yet there are those among us who seem to want to believe this, who seem to want to push their children under the instructorship of these people, who seem to want their people to resemble these people in some fashion, who have the nerve to see these people as representing some kind of civilization. These people may represent a culture, but not a civilization, particularly if we're going to look at the word civil in the sense that it is normally used. We saw this thing here. In fact, last week I remarked somebody had a conference here somewhere, and they voted against or they condemned terrorism. In fact, I saw Reagan, someone proposed that the meeting between Reagan and Gorbachev would involve a discussion of terrorism. And I found that so amusing. In fact, I find the newspapers and the TV, particularly the news, very, very amusing. And they're real jokes to watch. And in a way, you're looking at these guys and they're going to talk about terrorism. And yet, here are the world's two greatest terrorists sitting in conference. Two people in the world who have the world wondering, when is the end going to come? When is one of them going to go off and drop a bomb that is going to destroy the life of man and perhaps life on earth, period? The very fact that they are seen as powerful people, the very fact that the world sat in intense attention when they met, is symbolic of the fact that they are holding the world in a state of terror. And that we are frightened that they may, for some reason or other, let loose the great power that they have under their hands. And yet they have nerve enough to talk about terrorism as if it belongs to another people. And yet these are the people many of us want to claim that we want our children to be just like. These are the people we want our children to share a piece of the pie with. And yet these are the people whose very weapons are weapons of death. These are the people who represent death in the world. One of the things I recognized when I went through the graduate schools, and that struck me again and again and again, and that was this idea that these people are dead. They're not alive. And dead people are deadly. What kind of civilization can it be when the more civilized you become, the more deadly you become? How can you justify that as civilization? We as a people then have to recognize that there must be an alternative to this kind of being. That the idea of our people is not to share equality with these people. Because the system that they represent is one that in and of itself should be rejected. What kind of education, and the brother wonders sometimes why I don't want to be called doctor, or I don't want to be called this and that. In a sense, I think if we think about it very closely, we should be very hesitant about giving ourselves those titles that are conferred upon us by these other people and what they so-called represent. Because we have to recognize that the educated individual is the craziest of all individuals. That the educated individual is the most dangerous of all individuals. When this world comes to its end, it will not be brought to an end by the muggers on the streets, ladies and gentlemen. It will not be brought to an end by the drug addicts, by the street prostitutes, by the youth gangs. It's going to be brought to an end by people with PhD degrees. It's going to be brought to an end by people who studied physics and mathematics, who spent 15 and 20 and 30 years in school. It's going to be brought to an end by people who live in nice clipped lawns with houses on the corner, with neat hedges, two-car garages, nice little well-spoken children, the people who send their kids to private school. And one morning they'll go off to work and give their wives a nice little bourgeois kiss. And then they'll go down and sit in front of the console of their computer and proceed to blow themselves up along with the rest of the world. What kind of education is it that leads to these kind of people, ladies and gentlemen? These people are being educated into madness. A real Afrocentric education would not educate people in such a way that they then develop tools of death and destruction, that they become the endpoint of a destructive procedure. When you must recognize then that these very people you bow and dip to and defer to, these very so-called experts, are the people who are going to take you directly to hell. Because you are responding to them not in terms of truth, not in terms of what they're really saying, but in terms of their symbols of authority. And because they lay these symbols of authority on you, they can tell you any kind of nonsense, and you're ready to believe it. And because they threaten you and intimidate you with their degrees and with their so-called learning, you're not willing to follow your own common sense and question what they have to say and where they're going and what they're doing. And you don't have sense enough then to say, wait a minute, if you are so well educated, if you are so liberal, if you are so perceptive, if you are so concerned, why are you making weapons of death that will destroy you, your children, and the futures of mankind? Why are you then living in the laps of luxury, having far more wealth and money than you could ever use, while millions and millions of my people are starving and dying the world over? So we must recognize then that these kind of people cannot lay a correct perception of reality upon us as a people. And we must recognize that the very educated among them are the very ones who are responsible to a great degree for creating the distorted reality we face today. We have to recognize that knowledge in and of itself does not represent the salvation of mankind. You saw this in the book of Genesis, didn't you? Where Adam and Eve were told to stay away from the tree of knowledge. And the old devil there was telling them, what? Eat of it. You should be as gods.
He's just telling you that.
If you get a hold of this fruit, you'll be able to know good and evil, and you'll see right and wrong. You can see just as good as God sees, and in a sense, you will become God yourself. And they ate of the fruit of the tree of knowledge. And from this point on, we see that knowledge was not the salvation of man. And you can see it today in the Caucasian, who believes that the more knowledge he gets, the more somehow he's going to be able to be godlike. He thinks that if he gets to know more about DNA, he's going to be able to create life, and perhaps he will to a degree. But have you also noticed that the more knowledge he's gotten, the more of a danger he's become to the world? And that the more he got to know about the atoms and the so-called foundations of the world, the more he has also gotten to know about how to create death and destruction. So consequently, he is in a race with himself, thinking that knowledge will save him, when all it does in most instances is push him closer and closer to the end of his life on Earth. And so the Russians feel as if they knew a little more about the United States, a little more than the United States, then they would be able to defend themselves against the warlike nature of this country. And therefore, they learn a little more and build a more dangerous weapon. And the United States then feels that it knows a little more than the Russians know. He will defend itself against their weapon. And they move a little closer to death and destruction. Because, ladies and gentlemen, it is a people who have been educated in terms of knowledge, but not in terms of the spirit. Not in terms of the heart, and not in terms of the soul. It is a knowledge that is dead and materialistic.
Do not be deceived by this kind of thing, ladies and gentlemen. It is quite possible. Even if you don't think it's possible, you have to prepare for the what if. I've often mentioned to people about the Martin Luther King dream, you know, and he lays out the dream. It's a beautiful dream, I've remarked. But then that dream is also based on an if. You know, if they will love us, if they will accept us. And there are a lot of propositional statements in there. You know, if the economy is good and all of these kinds of things, then little black boys and white boys and girls, and they hold hands together. But we recognize that this is a propositional statement that's being made here. But you also have to ask the other question, what if it doesn't work this way? You see? What if the dream does not come true? Another problem we have often, we believe in the American mythology of progress. We as blacks have bought that idea. We bought this idea because America has advanced to some degree over time, and many of us just automatically assume that things have got to get better. That's sort of the American way of thinking. You know, we got it today, it's got to be better tomorrow. There's no law that guarantees you in any way that things have got to get better, ladies and gentlemen. There's no universal rule that says life has to get better, that says race relationships have to get better, simply because you were in slavery some years ago and now you have a so-called relative degree of freedom. The idea then that you can never go back into slavery, or the idea that you can never re-experience Reconstruction and the other kinds of things, to think that this is not going to occur. There is no law in the universe that tells you that that this cannot be the case. There's also this belief in the invulnerability of the white man, and the belief that somehow he's going to always protect his interests and be able to advance his interests, and therefore, as long as we hang in with this guy and protecting himself, coincidentally, he'll protect us. There is no law and rule in the universe that says the white man is going to rule forever. As a matter of fact, if you look at history, it's going to be very clear that the civilizations built by the white man shall perish as the others have perished. So even in the good times, a wise people prepare for bad possibilities. Even if we were to hold hands with little white boys and white girls, and you know, that was all this great Martin Luther King dream, that still does not say that we should not prepare for the other possibilities, because they can't occur. Recognize that all of these dreams are often based on, very much based on economic systems, and when economic changes come about, these dreams turn into nightmares. And recognize, let's look at an example here. Look at New York City and the problem we're having with education in New York City. This problem we're having, particularly in terms of African Americans, is very much connected with the economic situation in New York City. Ask yourself the question, what if we educated 100% of black and Hispanic children in New York City? They read well, they passed, they could pass all the civil service exams and the whole bit. But what would happen if the economy of New York City did not expand to accommodate all of these great graduates, and plus the other people who are also graduating at the same time. You see, we assume simply because we keep getting more degrees that there will be automatically more jobs out there. But that is not necessarily the case. You can educate a vast number of black and Hispanic children. You still have not solved the problem that there may not be a market out there to absorb these kids when they get out there. And you will see then some more furious confrontations taking place of a prepared group of people, an educated group of people who now cannot find jobs. And if you think the other people are unwise and unhip to this, you got another thought coming. So consequently, it becomes wiser for them to pretend that we are having tremendous problems in education, where you chop off over 50 or 60 or 70% of black and Hispanic children early in school, and you can say they don't work because they are not educated, and therefore everybody gets off the hook. But you can see the miseducation of these children is in part related also to the economic structure. It means that the economic structure has to expand at the same time you increase the number of graduates from secondary and from collegiate institutions. If the economy does not expand, the dreams of Martin Luther King will not come true because the economy cannot finance these dreams. And these dreams have to be financed by something. And so we have to recognize then what is going on in reality here. You have to ask yourself then, in so many years of education, to what degree are we as people and African people in a position to really protect our biological interests? And ladies and gentlemen, I believe that the biological interests of black people, the biological survival of black people, is in question. I'm not talking about quality of life. I'm talking about life itself. As I've often said, when we look at this situation, the military situation, the situation of pollution and so forth, what African nation, if the Caucasians decided tomorrow that they wanted to re-enslave African people, what African nation or group of people could militarily defend the interests of black people? With the kind of space weaponry we have floating around in the atmosphere, what African nation could defend militarily its own people, the people in the world? In what way has all of the college education and the degrees in engineering and so forth we have gotten advanced our ability to defend ourselves militarily and in other ways? Let me look, though, quickly at something else, and let's try to context education in terms of this. I often talk about what I call constants. A child, which is a major milestone in its development, when it can recognize constancies in the world. That is, when it recognizes how the world stays basically and essentially the same in many important areas, even though it appears to be changing, and even though in terms of its sense organs, it is changing. If you were to look at the images of this room on my retina or cornea, The room certainly would not have its rectangular shape, because it would actually be shaped very oddly. This door pass, as I move, each time I move, the door would change shapes. Even though perceptively, as far as I see it, it still stays the same. But actually, in terms of the image that's projected on my retina, it is constantly changing with every movement I make. And not only is it changing relative to the, but it is, its shape is changing. And if I were to go on just what is thrust on my retina, I would have to lean sideways or all kinds of ways trying to get through this door. But what happens is my brain corrects the image that is projected on my retina. And it maintains a constant image of this door despite the myriad of changes that may be projected on the retina of my eye. So it permits me then, despite where I stand in this room, how I move, to move very efficiently through that door, because my brain is maintaining a constancy of perception despite some obvious changes as projected on the retina. It is very important that we keep this in mind, because if you don't maintain a perception of the constants, then you will be deceived by every change in the world. You know, someone says, the French have a statement that goes, the more things change, the more they remain the same. You know, and often many things change so that they can remain the same. And often we have been deceived by the changes that have happened, let us say, in this country. We look at slavery time, we look at Reconstruction, and we break history up into these various parts. And often we compare what opportunities we have available to us today against when we were in slavery and against when we were segregated and against it. And it looks like we've come through tremendous changes. And we get the idea that the world has changed drastically. And of course, this feeds into the mythology of progress. That if it's changed this much since that time, it's got to get better further on down the road. But then you must recognize that there are certain constants that are still behind these apparent changes. And I'll mention some of the constants here. There could be others, of course, you can come through. When you talk about the European, you must recognize the European is only about 10% of the world's population. And that's a very important concept to keep in mind, ladies and gentlemen. It sounds like a coincidental statement, but it's one that's important because a great deal of European psychology and orientation to the world is based on their minority status. We as Africans and people of African descent are a part of the world's larger majorities, not minorities. The European is a small group of people. It is a minority group of people. And that minority, its minority status has shaped its psychology and its orientation to the world, both consciously and unconsciously. And often then for this minority to maintain its control over the world, it must, of necessity, maintain an enormous military power. And this is one of the constants that it's going to seek to maintain no matter how many white boys and girls you hold hands with. No matter how many white people you sleep with and marry and all of this kind of stuff, this is a constant. Military power. And overwhelming military power. As a matter of fact, it was a part of that military power that has you here today. And you can see today the greatest problem in this country and in Russia and in other European countries involves money spent for military outlays. A vast consumption of the country's wealth and resources goes into military resources. And despite the fact that you tell these people you have enough weapons now to kill each individual 700 times over, they still rob everybody to build up this military power. Because they recognize, being such a small group, that the only real advantage they have over these other large majorities is an overwhelming military presence. And now you can go to all of these schools and everywhere you want to go, but that's a constant. That constant has been there since you first met the white man, and as a matter of fact, it has not been diminished since. And the intention is that it will always be that way. Even when you join the military, you'll still be a part of that old set situation. It'll be set here. That's one of the constants that maintains that. The other constant, of course, is economic power. Maintaining economic control of the world. That control was being established when we first met this man in Africa. It has grown since that time, and it is still maintaining itself at this time. You can get as many jobs as you want to on Wall Street. You can work for IBM. You can work for all the rest. But the constant is that they're going to still be owned by Europeans, that they're going to still be controlled by Europeans, and that ownership and control is going to be used to manipulate the psychology of non-European people, to maintain the subordination and servitude of European people. You think now because you have a choice, you can choose computer engineering, and you can choose this and that, that somehow you have it over your great-grandparents who were slaves? Let's look at that constant. Of course, not every black slave was a field hand. We had roles there too. Not every black slave was a house servant. You had carpenters, you had skills.
Real national structures. one great people, a renewed and resurrected people. That's the black nationalist interpretation. Now, you don't have to accept it. You don't want it. But I can deal with that better than I can waiting to get into heaven while white boys enjoy their thing. And it gives us another key to the plan that God has for this people today. Now, obviously, it was today because it wasn't completely fulfilled back then. Exodus, the 4th chapter, the 22nd verse. And it says, and the 23rd verse. And thou shalt say unto Pharaoh. Now, we'll deal with this another time. This was an argument between two black men. Between the king of Egypt and a new leader of the people, Moses. There were two black men. There's a lot of questions as to whether the children of Israel were thrown out or they left on their own. But we're not going to go into that now. We're going to apply the principles in this text to our purposes tonight. Is that all right with you? All right. Now, whatever the different philosophies is fine. I like to listen to them all and draw what I can from each one of them. Dr. Ben always figures that out real good. That's one of my missions. We don't agree on everything. We get to religion, we'd be dead up until it. You know my decency. And thou shalt say unto Pharaoh, and I will paraphrase that, thou shalt say unto Reagan. Thus saith the Lord, Israel is my son, even my firstborn. And I say unto thee, let my son go, that he may serve me. And if thou refuse to let him go, behold, I will slay thy son, even thy firstborn. Now you have to understand that this Israel is not the settler colony of Zion Israel that's over there today, or the original black Israel, like you said. Because when the brothers and sisters left here, we relate to the Hebrew doctrine and say we have returned home and showed them all the historical data, they say that's true. You may have been the original one, but we empower that. So they know who they are. They're Europeans. They're not you Israelites and Hebrews. Yet, there's an affinity we have with that. We have it all the way through slavery time. We're always related to the plight of the children of Israel compared to that of our own. But the point I want to make clear here to you is that this nation, this black nation, Israel, is being referred to as the Son of God. And this now begins to clarify the mystery and the theological talking of what it means when it says Jesus is the Son of God. Yes. It's referring here to the late nation. And when it was applied to Jesus, it was as the head of that nation, the rightful head of that nation. And he was crucified not as the Savior of the world, but over the cross they wrote in Latin, Jesus, the King of the Jews. Jesus of Nazareth, the King of the Jews. It was a political assassination. You must understand that. A political attack. I'm not attacking anyone's faith. Understand me, please. But we can't just go on with what they taught us from the plantation until now. If you can draw strength from it, fine. Our people used what they had to draw strength from. I could never put down my mother. She used to walk through the house. Jesus, Lord, you've been my mother. You've been my father. You have helped me all the way through. And I saw the strength of that woman. And how we lived through that poverty and were lifted up out of it.
Yes.
So I couldn't put her down because I don't think exactly the same way she does on that. When she prayed to Jesus, I pray too. We're in harmony there. It's just a matter of approach. So I'm making clear to you that I'm not attacking you in any way. And we go over in another part of the text and say, let my people go. The point or the principle I'm seeking to stress here is that we must, according to the book of Revelation, Babylon is fallen, is fallen. Come out from among her, my people, and be not my people. This is Babylon. There was ever a place of confusion. This place. And they go around confusing the rest of the world. People seem to know what they want to do until they get there.
Yeah.
So the CIA and the FBI and everybody else. Then there's a state of confusion.
Mm-hmm.
We ought to come out from that confusion. We may not be able to make a complete physical exodus right now, but we got to make a spiritual exodus. We have to make a mental exodus as we go about the business. You're going to eventually have to make a physical exodus, because when the Creator rains down his terror on these people for what they have done to us and the rest of the world, you don't want to be anywhere around them. And he's coming out to them. The book of Revelation just says in that day, Satan shall be loosed from his pit. And you shall see him in his bones, nakedness. He's not even going to bother to smile and try to fool you no more. He's not even going to say we hold these Jews to be self-evident that all men are created equal. He's going to say, nigga, your time is up. But if we're right with ourselves, with the Creator, we say, oh, Satan, your kingdom is coming down. Your kingdom is coming down, and our day is coming. And that day is written in the book of Malachi. So the Son of Righteousness arrives with healing in his wings. Lord, have a and it's glorious. If I can get over no other point here tonight, I want you to understand that you have within you, each and every one of you, the key to the secret of the salvation of planet Earth. You are the ones that are being called to leadership. I know it's hard to I know he made you think so little of yourself that you are nothing. Yes, you are it. Every time he wants something new, he has to come to you. Right. Always he has to come to you. Well, he would not have been able to build America without you. Can't fight his wars without you. Why, he can't even dance. He still can't fight. I'm without you. Got you caught up in that disco. I'm not going to get into that. We are supposed to be about the business of building a better people in a better world, not submitting to and giving it to the existing one.
Yeah.
Be not partakers of this world. Create a new one.
Yeah.
If you believe in the Creator, you can do that. But don't go around giving me this service. You can pray 50 times a day, turn to the east, west, south, and down the way. You can read all the scripture you want. The Bible, the Holy Quran, and the last one of them you want to read. But if you are not about the business of black liberation, which is the most sacred thing in the world, liberating the black people, you're not about to be liberated. Brother Malcolm taught you that, and there have been very few men more logical than Brother Malcolm. Said if your religion is not leading you to do something for yourself, then you need to put it down. You are no business of nothing that's not doing anything for you. As the person you're living with, if y'all not doing anything, upgrade each other. Maybe y'all need to, but boy, you should try to pass it up if you can. I'm not asking you to break up a plan. As we talk about the Creator's master plan, and as we continue to talk about black people need to stop worshiping the white man and start serving God, the creative force, I find many of us tend to blame our condition and our lethargy and our unwillingness to get up and move on our religion and on God. Jesus will take care of it. This is my sin. All we got to do is call on the Lord and you'll make everything all right. Now, when you got to pay your rent or your house note, do you stop at that? No, you going down and ask your wife if you got a job for you. So you can do it. Or you find somewhere that can let it know. Or you go get you some foreign aid. We call it welfare, I call it foreign aid. Whatever means you use to take care of your bills, you don't stop at this prayer. Now, why are you going to leave the whole destiny of yourself, your children, your grandchildren, to just saying some prayers? If God requires of you not only to pray, but to get up and do something to support you to eat, drink, and have shelter and clothes, why does he not also require of you to get up and do something to establish yourself in the world? You stop blaming God for these things, the Creator. Stop blaming him for the fact that you are continuing to carry out the white man's will. Don't put that on the Lord. The Lord don't work like that. Well, you know, God raised this country up. He raised up America. It's God's land. Now, the creator that I serve, that I read about, is a good creator. And he does good to people. I could not see him condoning the genocide of a whole people. And if you think God raised up the white man and put him in power over you, and that God is America, is God's land, God's country, then you say God will commit genocide against a whole race of people. Not only that, you say that he condones our enslavement. That it was his will that we be brought over here and make to drink the white man's water after he took a bath in it. Our babies made to eat our pig calves with the animals. Our women made to do all kinds of freaky acts with him at night. And our little boy is turned into homosexuals because of his demonic desires. If you say this is God, that this is God's country, then look what you're putting on the Creator. You better watch what you say. You might be blaspheming. One of the reasons why it's so difficult for us to get out of this, to stop worshiping the white man and to start serving God, is because we're mostly attached to white folks. When we come to talk to you about something practical, let's say, well, let's do some stuff, let's build this, which is coined the phrase by the Honorable Marcus Garvey and the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, do for self and kind. When these men came before you and said, let's do for self, you got into all kinds of abstract, emotional responses. Like Malcolm said one time, he accused him of coming to teach you hatred. He said, now, if after all the white man has done to you, you don't hate him, certainly nothing we can say to you can make you.
Fool, let them knock you in your head and ride and turn on. Yes, there are things that you can
conceptions out of them, so they're not going to give it up. But while you're doing that, have some wisdom enough to know that they're not doing it because they love you. They're doing it because you got them on the spot. When one of my fellow clergymen, brother, the Reverend Jesse Jackson, put Budweiser on the spot, they're not giving up some hundreds of some millions to blacks for businesses and stuff because they love them. No, they're on the spot. They're going to lose all the billions of dollars, that $40, $50 billion that black folks spend on alcohol every year. Coca-Cola. So you can apply pressure that way, but don't think it's going to last forever. That white folks going to find a way out of it. We're so emotionally attached to the white man because of the psychological damage which has been done to our minds through deceptive imagery. Down on the plantation, the white man came and he said, "Look, I have something for you." Pulled out this picture of this blonde, clean hair, blue eyes, beard, holding a lamb with his hand like this. He said, "Now this is the Son of God. Knowing the black folks are spirit people. With God. And they being taken from the land without knowledge of self, them. This is the Son of God. Be as much like him as you can. And every problem you have, take and lay it at his feet." That is why it's so difficult for black folks to solve their problems today. They always look for some liberal white man. Come and solve the problem for them. So they're looking for a white Jesus. When they saw Kennedy, they saw Jesus. When they saw Jimmy Carter, they saw Jesus. When he got in there, they realized that. One of those congressmen, I'm not going to mention his name, one of those black congressmen, one of those black congressmen was going to crucify that right on the spot for life. Now this is the imagery that was put before you. Adam, Eve, God, anybody that was somebody. So now here you grow up with the idea of, I've got to take my problems to someone outside of myself. Anybody that's worth anything is a white man, not me. I'm not worth anything. So you grow up hating yourself. That's why you try to star your face up, cover it up, do everything you can to make it here. Do anything you can to yourself. When you see a black person, you heard it up, knocking down. Because when you look in the mirror, you're reminded, "Well, I've got this on me. This is a black, and I'm black. It's cool to be black." See, you got the prettiest color in the world. It's a suntan lotion being sold all over the world to look like you. Old Derek walking around trying to straighten her hair. That trying to look like you when you stand up talking about this is the fact that I'm black and it's holding me back. Now, brothers, I know you heard this before, but you need to hear it again because obviously you didn't carry out what you're supposed to carry out. Now, when you bring it up all out of slavery times, because see, even though they did that, you had good preachers like the prophets, Nat Turner, the right Reverend Gabriel Prosper, the right Reverend Denmark Bethel, and the Reverend Mother. Harry Tubbs. See, they preach the gospel of black liberation. Yeah. Reverend Mother of Sojourner Jesus. That was the real gospel. When the church was set up, that's what it was set up for by the black man. You have to understand that. We can't go all into that today. Check chapter 23 and God's Bible and the black man's destiny. When we get to Sunday school now, in modern times, they give me a Sunday school card when children come home from school, Sunday school, say, "What's up with us today?" But everybody, Jesus is the Son of God. He came to save the world. I'm going to show you this little picture, this little Sunday school picture, and what you have. Blonde hair, blue eyes. Now, how was that child going to grow up with self-esteem? And you wonder why he has problems in the world. You wonder why there's gang wars among us, why we can beat up on each other so much. Self-hatred is where it comes from. And that's not the only base of the problem, but that's where it starts. Of course, the problem is more complicated than that. I realize it. And we have to deal with it in all fields of discipline. And I'm talking about from this area now. That's where it started at. In your family Bible, it says. Here you have a church. And black folks, as the brother says, the book Satan in the pulpit.
That's right.
I have over $10 million and $1 billion industry.
That's right.
Build these big churches and put a white man up on the irrefutable. It's in the book, and I probably will talk about that tomorrow. But here we're going to put a lie out there and say, that's what it did to the mind. Moses, the greatest story ever told. Ten Commandments. Talk from heaven. Yeah. You know what happened to him? He got to praying Moses, and he got into it so much when the director said cut, he couldn't get out of the road. He got locked in. And they had to go get him out of the middle of the sunset. He couldn't, in West Carolina Boulevard, chopping the tail apart the Red Sea. Almost had hit by a truck. He said he was a psychiatrist. He couldn't get out of the road. I guess some of you standing up there in the cedar parted before you, you know, you don't realize you're in a fantasy. You're in a
right.
The white man made you believe in his fantasy. And as I saw that, many of y'all listened. And every text that they mentioned before they could finish it, black folks could finish it out too.
Yeah.
And they were applying it to that white man. Well, we know that Moses was a black man without shadow of doubt. The Bible said, put your hand in your bosom.
Sure,
when he took it out, his hand was white. He said, oh my God, please don't do that. You give the Lord some argument at first. I can't go down there. I can't. Well, I'm not. I can't rap. I can't give you rap. I can't rap. But I can't go down there. Just put your hand in the book. Put it in there. Get it out. You want to be like that all over the house? Now, it was white when he took it out. When he put it back in, it came out with his prison. What color was the man? I'm going to deal with that now. But that's circumstantial evidence. We have more factual evidence than that. Turn on the TV around Easter, the Festival of Fools Day.
As they say, you come in and take everything away from us. Our holidays, our everything. Yeah, I'm trying to clean out all the madness so ain't nothing left but your naked soul before the universe. Then you'll be free. Then you'll be free. But we'll get back to that in a minute. When we consider that people tend to choose and name their deities, that which they worship, on the basis of what it can do or what they think it can do for them, and the fact that the dog is the white man's best friend, I did not say that. White people said that. Have you ever heard white people say, dogs are people too, you know? Have you ever heard that? How many in here have heard that? Bear witness to that. Now, you know you're dealing with something strange. When they tell you that a canine is a human, you know you're not dealing with a human being. Yes. I contend as a paleoanthropologist, a bona fide paleoanthropologist, that is a study of the origin and development of ancient humanity, that Caucasoid people do not fit into the Homo sapiens species of which we are supposed to be a part. They have too many characteristic differences from all other humans around them. They fit in the category, and they told you, mankind. Not human, but mankind. Look like a man, favor a man, but damn sure don't act like damn one. No, just look at their history. As I told you before, I got degrees in their history first. So I know them better than they know themselves. You take any animal species or any genus that's called in the family of which you have many different species. And in that genus, if there's more than two or three different taxonomic principles, that is, characteristics, between one group and another, it's a separate and distinct species. The difference between white people and other people of color, and particularly between African people, may be up to about 100. So we're not even clapping, so you can get that out of your head. We're all human. You gotta act human to be human. But there's Africans that act, and I heard somebody saying that when I was in the restroom, and I ain't trying to bust on you, I love you, but listen, I have a job as an elder and a scholar among these people to record. Stop talking about they act worse than white people. There is no African on earth that can act worse than white people. That means you don't know the history of white people. They can act bad now. They can get real mean as a result of having been infected by white people. Well, we were fighting each other before white people got there. Nowhere near the scale or level that we function on at this time. There've always been some bad, and we had corrective mechanisms for that. We didn't fool around. You mess around and endanger the community, noontime execution was all over. Well, no, they need to go to the insane asylum. No, you hurt this community, you need to go to rest. And that minimized the evil and crime. As Dr. Clark, his state, peace be upon him, his presence must be here very strong tonight, used to say there weren't no jails when Europeans came to our land because we didn't need any. Also, there were no orphanages because nobody threw away any children. There was no old folks' homes and nobody abandoned their elders. The white man's best friend who used to guard their caves and flesh food for them became a symbol of their deity and was their original totem. I can't go into all this tonight. Get that tape back there. When you pray, be careful of the name you're calling on there. It deals with this whole God concept. England doing a series of lectures, a Christian brother who's in the movement, but he's having a hard time breaking with the myth. And he said, can you tell me in the dictionary, or can you tell me any encyclopedia I can go to where it states that the word God is translated directly from the word go? I said, no, I can't. And he got a broad smile on his face. See, I got him. And he was getting ready to sit down. I said, oh, wait 1 minute. We're not finished. But this I can tell you. I can tell you this, that the first symbolic deity of European people was the wolf. They say that in their history. The Germanics, from which come all of the other Europeans, the Indo-Europeans, worship the wolf. How do I know they worship the wolf? Today, in their God capital, the capital of Christendom, where Dr. Benson said the little faggot with the cap on resides, the Pope of Rome resides, stands a huge cast iron statue of a she-wolf, Lupia, and two little white boys, baby, stopping her breath. That's their mama, and that is their God. Romulus and Remus, the founders, they say, of the city of Rome. And every Lupercalia, which you call Valentine's Day, I didn't mean to get in these holidays, because I'm going to mess with me. I ain't gonna mess with these Negroes out there. They ain't gonna find no shade. They would get buck naked, sacrifice wolves, cover themselves in the bloody skin, and go through the city with the entrails, the bloody entrails of the wolf, and beat the women and to purify them. And to chase sin out of the city. This is an impossible task. You can't chase sin out of a white folks' city. And they would come to a woman with a piece of paper with her name on it. And give it to her. And that woman was compelled to go lay down with this nasty, stinking, bloody, wolfskin-wearing cracker in an orgy. Celebration to Lupercalia. And that's where the whole idea of Be My Valentine came from. But they didn't ask no question. They gave a command. He could have been ugly, hunchback, his ding-dong dripping with syphilis and gonorrhea. But she still had to go with him. When you're dealing with white folks, you're dealing with the fact that European culture is a canine-centered culture. Y'all be talking about, I'm the first black person to live in it. I don't want to live around here with all them dogs messing all over everywhere. They can't live without them dogs. That's their parent. That's their dog. Lick them in the mouth, sleep with them, and do a whole lot of other things with them. Now, this word God as used in the Old Testament. And let me say this. I'm not bragging, but you have to qualify yourself with African people. You got to qualify yourself because we get so arrogant in our ignorance. I can tell you what's in the Bible and what is correct and what is not correct because I have read it from cover to cover at least 7 times. I stopped counting after a point. I not only read it in the most corrupt and degenerate language on the planet, which is English. When I was in the seminary, I had to translate it from the Greek and from the Hebrew. And from some of the other African languages that most people didn't even know it had come out of. And the word God, whenever you see the big G-O-D, whenever you see it in the Old Testament or it is translated directly or mistranslated directly from the Hebrew terminology Elohim, which is a plural and refers to male and female energy, which is the way that all people in the ancient world thought about the divine force in the universe. They say you can't create nothing even on a spiritual level unless you have an interplay between male and female energies, for the physical is merely a reflection of the spirit. The white man is the first one to come along with this masturbating Father God who had a son and did everything by himself. And you love that. Oh, Father God. Father God! That's because a lot of us didn't have our fathers in our lives, so we're trying to replace it with this fool. When I told the man about the Italian and Lupercalia and the founding realm, he said, isn't that Germanic? I said, see, you're speaking without knowledge. The Burundi and the Heruli, the Burgundi and the Heruli were Germanic tribes that settled in the Buddha Vitli. But then how do you know if dogs fell backwards? Why would it be that way? Because if you want to know white folks, and I'm going to give you a key now, I'm going to make you a master psychologist. You're going to be able to whip any psychoanalyst when you walk out this door. Any European psychoanalyst. You don't have to read Freud or Jung or any of them. That'll mess your mind up. Leave it alone. If you're not reading Akbar or Welsing or Ani or somebody like that, you better leave that alone. Wade Nobles, Amos Wilson, somebody, that's it. But to know white folks, 2 things you must observe constantly. 3. 1 is their fairy tales. They will tell you everything you need to know about them and what motivates them in their fairy tales. The next thing is their fairy tales have been extended into their media. I'm an ardent watcher of movies. My children, when they were little, we used to have movie night on Saturday night. We'd get a stack of videos. My daughter worked in a video store, so hey, popcorn and some goodies. But when we watched it, I decoded. In fact, they used to hate to watch a movie with me. They say, we know that, Daddy. We know. Can we just watch a movie? movie for the movie's sake. No, because don't you see what they just did to you? They just had this white man hugging on, feeling all over this black woman over there in the corner at that little party. And you focusing on this over here, can't you see what they're doing to you? You must decode the symbols, and that's why I'm dealing with this language that they use in religions today, to help decode the symbols. That is the key. Once you get in the decoding process, it becomes addictive. It does. It's hard to be at peace in this land, because everything you see, yes, that's exactly what it is. And you learn to get out of the way before it splash on you. But they say in Alice in Wonderland, which is one of their classics, one of their best, Alice in Wonderland, they say once you get here, everything goes backwards. Does it say that? Correct me if I'm wrong. Everything we say backwards. I said, the white man just told me how he does things. The opposite of the way everybody else does. His thinking is opposite. That's why I doubt his place in the human species. Because it's the opposite. In my book, African People and European Holidays, the Men of Genocide, book two, I talk about what my students dub the Barashango theory of irreconcilable opposites. What's good for the white man is always bad for us. Always. Sometimes we get a little good out of it in spite of, that's because of our creativity. Because some people say, well, my mama was Christian and my wife wasn't there. I said, what they did, they also took chitlins, they took hog guts, garbage, and made a delicacy out of it. Because they didn't have nothing else. So they used whatever was before them to the best of their ability at the time. Now that we know what hog guts will do to you, we got any sense, we won't eat them no more. But we didn't have anything else that we had to deal with. So whatever's good for them is bad for us, and whatever's good for us is considered to be bad by them. The very idea of us wanting to teach our children from an African-centered frame of reference and their true story is considered to be dangerous by white folks. Now, if they meant you any good at all, they would have no trouble with you knowing your true story. Because they know once you know the true story of humanity, they don't fit anywhere in the damn picture. Nowhere. When they appear on the scene, they appear acting like animals, not like humans. And even though they have adopted some human characteristics that we taught them, they still act like animals. Y'all all right? Let me finish up with this word God now because I got some other stuff I need to share with you. But the Bible itself gives you a clue about where the word God, how it came into corruption. I couldn't figure out how they could translate the word Elohim, which means the strong ones, mother, father, energy, how does it translate the English into God? There's no logical line of delineation in that translation. Except when I check this out. In Matthew 19:16-17, it says, there is none good but one, that is God. I said, oh, there it is. They took the word good, took a zero out, and adapted the word God, which is the word dog spelled backwards, the original deity. They knew exactly what they were doing. As the Honorable Elijah Muhammad taught us, what? Masters of trichnology. In the Living Bible version of the same text, it says, this is supposed to be Yeshua ben Yosef speaking. Jerusalem Slim, not Jesus, because you know wasn't nobody around named Jesus, but I ain't even going there now. Get the tape, a black revolutionary called Jesus, and what's the other one there? The real Jesus was a black man. I got a lot of stuff on Jesus back there. The real Jesus. Hey, Dr. J! Live forever! Forever. Forever. The word good, or this word that they got good comes from the word ma'at. Check it out. Follow me now. Ma'at, one of the great spiritual principles taught by our ancestors, always was, always is, always will be. Ma'at, absolute balance, truth, justice, reciprocity, that which is real, the foundation upon which everything else in the universe is built upon. Female energy. That's why I got to have that sister. Got to have that. I may love you, I may even tolerate you for a minute and try to get you some help, but I will never accept your behavior because it's totally illogical. Once you have been in heaven, and Dr. Ben taught us where heaven was, between the legs of a black woman, and I can testify to that. Testify to that. It's all on the temples and Kevin and show. Knew it, giving birth to life. Heaven, the stars, everything in her body. Now, once you done had that, how you going to stick your thing in a sewer? I ain't mean to go there, but that's what I was told to do. Here's a white boy now trying to understand that and explain that which is inexplicable for him. Henri Frankfurt, in his book Egyptian Religion, page 63, says, Ma'at is good and its worth is lasting. He said that's what the ancient text of the African says. Ma'at is of advantage and its utility lasts. Another quote from the ancient text. But the white boy goes on to say, the word Ak, A-K-H, which is translated to be good or to be of advantage, possesses, according to the dictionary, an unclear definition. That was clear to the Africans who came up with the term, what it meant. But this white boy said, it is unclear to us. He said, in the case of Ma'at, I want you to listen very carefully and maybe you'll stop with these fruitless efforts of trying to win white folks over and appeal to some kind of fantastic mythological morality in them. In the case of Ma'at, a concept which is totally, which is what? This is a white man speaking to you now. Totally alien. What does alien mean, brothers and sisters? Ain't got diddly squat to do with me. And I ain't got nothing to do with it.